Magyanatimirandasya gyanam jana shalakaya chakshunimitam yinatasmi shri gurave namah vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhu bhyayavacham patitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Gaura Dai Pushpavanta Chitra Sangrutamanudam Jayatam Surato Pangor Mama Mandamater Gati Matsar Basapadam Bojo Radha Madana Mohanu Bhaktya Bhinaya Parad Lakshay Kriptashakamadittarangamadhe Kripa Maitvam Sharanam Prapanam Vrinde Namaste Charanaravindam Vrinde Namaste Charanaravindam. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sadhu Sangha ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. Krishna is hiding behind the third verse of Shikshastra. So, welcome to all of you. Thank you again for being here. And welcome for those who are coming for the first time today. And today we are continuing with our exploration of the third verse of Shikshastakam. I'm trying to hopefully get a glimpse into how deep we can go and how there is no end, to touch upon one point of infinity. One point of infinity is infinite. You don't need the whole line of infinity. Just touch one point and that's, you have enough for infinity, for eternity. So the third verse is the, we like to call, the golden rule of the golden Lord. Inviting us, giving us a golden opportunity, making everything golden, and coming from the infinite one, from Ananta, Bhagavan. So whatever comes from the infinite one is infinite in its nature, and in its infinite in its exploration. So we are just spending a few 5 days trying to, 5 days to address this verse. It sounds like too much, but it still is just an appetizer. The full meal is always expanding. So yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, we had a first meeting. We did some sort of introduction to the third verse of Shikshastakam. And yesterday in our second meeting, we addressed the first line of the verse, Trinadapi Sunichena, when Mahaprabhu is inviting us to be humbler, or as humble as the quiet grass, or as we're putting this poetically here. So can we put the curtain a little bit, if possible? Sorry. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, if you over there need more curtain, adjust accordingly, please. Yeah. So, yeah, yesterday we spoke about humility, but also we made it clear that all these four qualities that Mahaprabhu was talking about, Sunichina, Sahishnu, Namani, Namanadena, somehow are one same thing addressed and expressed from different places, no? Because you cannot have humility, full humility, and be absolutely intolerant, right? You cannot be modest and be disrespectful at the same time. So all the things come together. So we started by defining what healthy humility is not, right? Instead of saying what's humility, let's first start by debunking false myths about what humility does not look like. So we share a few ideas in that direction. We also reflected together on how sometimes we can use the external form of humility to avoid the internal substance of humility. we can become, we can acquire a PhD in formal humility, knowing what to say, what to do externally, so everyone thinks I'm very humble, while actually I'm avoiding being humble in the most substantial way. And of course, then we start to define what's real humility. And we say different ideas. There's not one single definition that we can bring. But I remember ones that always stuck with me is this one that we share from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that humility means submission to the truth. So whatever there is truth, I submit to that, no matter which form it takes. Whatever there isn't truth, in my submission to the truth, I won't submit to that, no matter which form it takes, even if it comes with holy saffron robes, so to say. If it's untruth, I cannot put my head down before that, because that's not humility. That's the opposite of that, right? So on that foundation, we talk how humility can take different shapes. It's not just... It can be, but not necessarily. Okay. It may take the form of something that seems the opposite of humility. But if the heart is in the right place, in perfect submission to the truth, that's humility. We also connected the word humility, as we use it in English, humility, or in Spanish also we'll say humildad, so it's very similar, with the word humus. Humus, you say humus?
Humus.
Okay. The root of humility comes from humus, which means soil, earth, grounded, fertile soil, decomposing our false sense of identity, whatever analogies you can draw from humus. And then we, of course, studied in detail the first line, highlighting how the most important thing that the most important person for us, Mahaprabhu, ever said begins with the word grass. So it doesn't sound too, like, how to say, flattery or shiny. The first most important thing of the grass. So grass is insignificant, apparently so, but Mahaprabhu comes to teach us, especially when you feel something's ordinary, you have to look deeper till you contact the extraordinariness of everything, even grass. Now, today we'll go to the tree examples. So he's resorting to this so-called ordinary example from nature that we generally walk by without major, without noticing them at all. I'm not noticing the grass generally. My day passes, I don't think I ever think about grass once, probably, in a year. Trees, probably casually, if a tree fell on your house or something like that, you think about the tree to curse it. But what to see a guru in the tree or in the grass? So Mahaprabhu is trying to teach us, no? Humility, and grass is teaching us humility. How? Again, we went through some toxic readings of that first line. And even we tried to correct a little bit some of, not correct, but just try to show how the verse originally speaks, because sometimes we may have seen, we may have heard, you have to be lower than the straw in the street. But lower in itself brings a connotation of lower, not humble necessarily. And the straw in the street, but the verse doesn't say lower and doesn't say street. Straw in the street seems like more a dead straw in the street. But here's some humbler, like the humble as the blade of grass, as the grass. And how then for we can read this first line in a healthy way? The grass is bending, humble, but as we say, without breaking. When a grass bends, doesn't break. So we should bend, we should be humble in a way that is not breaking us. Right? We are already broken people in many ways. We come broken in many ways to Krishna consciousness, looking for healing, looking for redemption, looking for nourishing. So the last thing we need is to add brokenness in the name of Mahaprabhu, in the name of transcendence, right? So we try to explain this first line in a way that hopefully redeems us from wrong readings of it. And then we expanded upon other sections of the scripture which may be invoked in connection to humility, in particular this line that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami mentions when he says, woe lower than the worm in the stool. You have to do something with that one also. So we also explained that line remember by a story. I won't tell the story again, so those who haven't been here, I leave you with the mystery, and then you have to do homework and ask those who are here, and they have to do their homework by remembering what I say. But we try to explain how that example is not at all something, diminishing for the self, but actually the very opposite. It invites us to find gurus everywhere, even in the worm, in the stool. We also, just to conclude our summary from yesterday, we also spoke about the nature of love as ever evolving. So that naturally brings humility. Because if I'm just like a glimpsing at an ever evolving ocean of love, I cannot but feel humble with that. I cannot ever ascertain my position as supreme or definitive in onto something that is constantly becoming bigger, deeper, more beautiful, right? I can just present myself in service to that, because it's such as that is of such a high acceptance. We also mentioned yesterday how this whole verse in total speaks about nishta, the stage of bhakti that is represents stability, fixity, determination, and that translates also as being deeply present in the here and now. And when your mind is focused, present, you can pay attention to what's happening. You can pay attention to the point that the grass starts to talk to you and tells you, be humble. And that the tree starts to teach you as a guru, be tolerant. No. Those things are happening right now. No, it's not that I'm going crazy. I'm saying the grass is speaking, the trees are talking. Maharaj, what's going on? They're not talking. If we don't hear them talking, we are the crazy ones. Because when we study, you know, great personality from all ancient traditions, they were so attuned also to nature, so present to nature. And they were receiving so much inspiration, so many messages. But I would say, especially in our modern age, our attention is so scattered. We are so absent that we may be surrounded by gurus, like Mahaprabhu was seeing in the grass and the tree, but we may not be listening. So nishta means pay attention, pay special attention. So, and that's humbling. Again, when you pay close attention, you realize, wow, I'm surrounded by gurus. Literally, and that's humbling. The grass is guru, the tree is guru, Krishna is the original guru, he's in every atom. I'm surrounded by gurus indeed. That's deeply humbling. So pay attention, listening attentively, presence, all this is connected to this verse. And then we concluded our meeting by talking about unconditional love. If you recall, we are trying to read each one of these lines also through the lenses of unconditional love. How the fact that Krishna loves me unconditionally without me doing anything to deserve that is so humbling. I'm receiving such a wondrous gift. And when I ask, look, why I received that gift? What was the reason? What did I do? Which is the earning? No, there's no earning. It's just pure, sheer, generous gift from Bhagavan. So humbling. He's loving me, he's loving everyone, not only me. He's loving even the blade of grass, because he is love. So we conclude on that note, unconditional love. And this first line read through the lens of unconditional love. In between also we had one exercise of sharing, and then we had also a brief homework, voluntary homework, no forced labor, in inviting each of us to spend some time observing nature, even walking barefoot in the grass, trying to establish some relationship with the grass, again, with one of our gurus, as Mahaprabhu did, and trying to draw some lessons. So I hope you were able to have some experience in that connection and remind yourself, wow, I'm surrounded by, I mean, I have unlimited paramparas here on the soil, all right? Especially here, you're very fortunate. You don't have that much concrete. So grass, trees, so many paramparas surrounding you. So anyhow, that's what we saw yesterday. Just to keep that in context. Today we'll go to the second line of the verse. But let me recite the whole verse, and then we go to the second line. Trinadapi, Sanichena, तरोरपि तरोरिबा सहिष्णुना अमानि नाम अनादिन कीर्तनीय सदाहरि. We have this poetic adaptation saying, be as humble as the quiet grass, as enduring as the ancient tree, seek not the praise of man, but honor every soul you see. With this heart, sing the name of Hari, endlessly. Kirtaniya Sadahari. So today we want to concentrate our attention on the second line. Tarorapi Sahishnuna. Be as tolerant or as enduring as the ancient tree. Just one line, three words, but we'll try to realize together how much content is there. It's not about the number of words, but the quality of the content in those. So as usual, as we'll conclude by seeing this line through the lens of unconditional love, let's begin by going through what we call via negativa, saying what healthy tolerance is not. That may be more, we may be more familiar with that than with the actual healthy one. So let's start with the familiar and see if that needs to be dethroned. So we get a proper idea of what is what. So I'm inviting you for brainstorming now. So how does basically toxic tolerance look like? I'll start kickstarting if it helps. Like, I don't know, maybe passive endurance without healthy boundaries, which open the door for all types of abuse, physical, mental, emotional, allowing yourself to be exploited in relationships, in community dynamics, in the name of being tolerant. Just define that to yourself. No, I have to be tolerant. That's not the tolerance Mahaprabhu is talking about here. Remember, all this verse is healthy verse. So all the things that it includes have to be found and expressed in a healthy way. What else? Ramachandra has something to say.
Well, I can say intolerance, Maharaj, but that's very stupid.
No, it's
but
okay.
I was thinking that intolerance could be considered, intolerance to the proper thing could be considered appropriate, or not a form of tolerance, but it's intolerance. But it's appropriate to have intolerance at times. But that's not really the question you've asked.
No, but it's okay, it's a point. Yeah, the question is what healthy tolerance is not? And of course, intolerance is a way of saying that, but something else that looks like tolerance, but it's not healthy, basically.
I'm too afraid to confront people, so then I just pretend to be tolerant. But I haven't got the courage to sort of speak up and say
And as you will see, many of the examples will be given, like this one, start to resemble what we say yesterday about what healthy humility is not. And it's okay, that's not redundancy, that just confirms how these qualities are like inextricably connected, right? So there is place for that as well. Yeah, totally. What else? Like suppression of emotions come to my mind also. Like, I don't know, anger comes. You have to tolerate anger. But instead of tolerating anger, you are repressing anger. And as we were saying today, when you repress one emotion, you repress all other emotions. In emotional repression, you cannot be selective. Yeah, I will repress this anger, but all the other emotions will be expressed in a healthy way. Generally, all of them get shut down. So that can happen in the name of tolerance. I have to tolerate all the things that are coming, pain, suffering, anger, instead of I have to acknowledge them. I have to express them in a healthy way, no, not becoming a serial killer in the community. But sometimes, I don't know, just to give an example, if someone is mistreating me and I may be angry by that, that anger can be expressed in the form of setting boundaries so the abuse stops. So it's a healthy expression of anger. No, it's not about not being angry, but doing what to do, knowing what to do with that, right? No emotions are bad, as they say. They are only bad things we do with emotions. But the emotions are not in themselves bad. It's just a type of energy that you need to know what to do. Should we cramp through?
Just another example, really, but enduring the requests of an institution or the expectations of an institution and substituting your own personal needs in the form of health and proper self-care, basically. Tolerating the demands of your own body, and avoid it, you know, in pursuance of so-called a higher sacrifice.
Of course, we are not against sacrifice, but it has to be done in a way that the whole project is not collapsing, basically. Something else that comes to mind in the name of tolerance may be witnessing a situation where there's clear, not something I'm going through myself, but I'm witnessing someone else being, I don't know, abused or whatever, and I'm tolerating that. No, maybe in the name of, well, I don't want to offend anyone or I don't want to judge, but sometimes, and this is mentioned Chaitanya Charitamrita in the Bhagavatam. If you witness a situation of abuse and you do not take action, basically, you immediately become accomplice to that. No? Because sometimes we may not do anything, try not to become accomplice to that. But by being passive, when we know there is something wrong, you become part of the problem, basically. No? But all that can happen in the name of tolerance, again. No? I'll tolerate. No? I don't want to judge, I will be tolerant. Yeah. Yes, I go on the phone.
I was just thinking about when you have dependents, whether it's the guru, with disciples, a parent, children, if one, in the name of tolerance, just allows bad behavior to go on, then that's also not beneficial for them. And maybe even the other way around as well, like for the disciple tolerates, a child tolerates a certain bad behavior of a parent, and that can, so I'm just thinking about how for another person, one thing for how it can affect us when we misuse that tolerance, but also how it can affect others and their own growth.
Thank you. Yeah, I will say in one sense, that if we engage in unhealthy tolerance, it's harmful in every direction, basically. It's not like, okay, maybe harmful for me, but it's beneficial for you. No, it's harmful in every direction. So yeah, that's good also, because we don't want to be harmed, but we don't want to harm others also by our own toxic tolerance, so to say, right? Sometimes we also may think of an example that comes to mind, like resentful submission. No? Like sometimes I'm outwardly tolerating something, but internally I'm like, fermenting with resentfulness. But I'm not saying it for whatever reason. There are many reasons. And somehow I'm bitter. I'm becoming like crippled. I'm not expressing that, so I'm tolerating. And again, that's not healthy. That's not tarora pisege shrona. That's not how the tree, as we'll see, tolerates. No, the tree tolerates in a way that remains being a tree. No, it's not that tolerates and after 2 days the tree collapses and falls. Somehow it remains, as we'll see, well-rooted and growing at the same time upwards. Upwards, downwards. No, that's what we should do in our spiritual project also. Not only upwards, but as I like to say, it's not only about transcending and ascending, but also descending, no? Grounding work and transcending as well. Yeah. Anyhow, so that said, there's more brainstorming to do for sure, but now let's shift, having mentioned what healthy tolerance does, how does it not look like, how healthy tolerance looks like. Of course, we already say it indirectly. Now let's say more directly. What is Mahaprabhu trying to tell us here? Tarora Pisaishana, what's healthy? Tolerance.
Hard to say because it might vary from person to person.
Yeah, yeah.
Prabhupada talks about the tree tolerating being cut and tolerating all weather.
Mm-hmm.
But it might be artificial for us to tolerate things like that. Standing out in
the air. But we can learn from that and draw a lesson that applies to our particular capacity, right?
I'm just thinking about that story about the in the Mahabharata, the was it Karna? He could tolerate a lot of pain, right? Because he was a Kshatriya.
Mm.
And then the teacher said to him, You're not a Brahmin, you're a Kshatriya.
We got you. Yeah.
So I guess different people have different thresholds, right?
Mm-hmm. Sitarani?
Oh, I was just thinking tolerating, like we were talking about all the babies that we maintain.
Uh-huh.
And just being comfortable in that messiness.
Yeah. Acceptance, no? A word will be acceptance also, no? Like I accept where I am. I accept the things that I'm still dealing with. It's a way of tolerating. I have to deal with them on a daily basis, but there has to be some acceptance because if I'm like... what's the opposite of that in English? I want the word, but it's not coming. I'm in denial of that, like struggling, not accepting what is already there.
Resisting,
yeah. If I'm in resistance to that, even if I try to tolerate, resisting what I have to tolerate, it's like makes tolerance a hell, basically, right?
Unsustainable.
Yeah, so there has first to be acceptance of what I'm tolerating and understanding why I'm tolerating. There has to be some understanding. I kind of just tell you, just tolerate that. It's like, why? Just tolerate. You can try, but after a few minutes, cooking pressure goes, pressure cooking pot, like, So what else? Thinking about this, yes. Atmananda Prabhu.
One time when Prabhupada was instructing the devotees about preaching, particularly with university students, he said you listen to them.
Mm.
In other words, you tolerate even nonsense that they speak for the sake of honoring, at least validating their thoughts, so that then they will listen to you.
Mm. Yeah, and that makes me think about something we may go in a minute about also compassion.
Yeah.
Like because the listening has to be not from, okay, I will listen to you so you say what you want and you feel listened by me and then I tell you what I want to tell you. But it has to be more from compassion, right? Because that's not, if there's no empathy and compassion, there's no actual listening.
Exactly.
It's just a facade, like I'm waiting for my turn. No. Speak. Ready? Okay, my turn now. That's not listening, right?
Sometimes that's even in a spirit of patronizing people. And it comes across as this kind of condescending, almost arrogant.
Yeah. What else about regarding tree? Let's say something about tree, tolerance and the tree. But you had something before that, or just sorry?
I was just thinking tolerating happiness and distress.
We have the verse of the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah.
The same merged Tikshavar and Sahishuna, is it the same? The Tikshavar and Sahishuna. Yeah, there are different words of implying tolerance, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was also thinking that you have to tolerate so many different phases of life that you go through when you're embodied, like birth, somebody dies, grief. What can you do about that?
Every age has.
So there's so much you have to tolerate.
Yeah. Every chapter has its corresponding main tolerance, no? Like even if you say, okay, when I'm born, I have to tolerate being born. When I'm dying, okay, I'm sick. But when I'm a teenager, I'm very energetic. But you have to tolerate being a teenager in itself. No, that's not bad. It's just like it's a stage to tolerate. Existential crisis and ups and downs. Nothing of that is bad. That's my point. It's important for us to understand that to tolerate something doesn't mean that what we are tolerating is bad, right? Because if not, we approach tolerance in a very negative place. Okay, this is bad. I have to tolerate it. No, it's not about that. It's about, as we will see in a minute, why Mahaprabhu is giving the tree as an example of, and how does the tree tolerate? So can you think about something regarding the tree in terms of tolerance? How, what does healthy tolerance look like in connection to the tree? For me, it comes a few things, but
I was thinking climatic changes. Mm-hmm. And with what Snoopy said, it's like climatic changes in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so we could say acceptance of dualities, no? Mm-hmm. Cold, heat. One says it's a duality, the tree is not protesting. The tree knows it will come, cold will come, heat will come. He's not like celebrating summer and depressed on winter. He's accepting, no? Right. Accepting the duality first, no? Then you can welcome them, deal with them, but you have to accept there's such a thing as winter. There's such a thing as end of winter and beginning of, because if you even have not even accepted that, you're still in battling the unavoidable. So it's a recipe for misery, right? So acceptance of dualities. What else? Compassionate understanding comes to my mind. Not like the tree offering shade and shelter. It's a way of, while staying there, no? Like way of being compassionate and understanding, extending that to others while accepting the dualities of what's coming. Some of you were raising your hands, sir. Who?
I was just thinking that same, yes, what you were saying. And I was thinking, well, not just that, but the tree carries on to do that despite however it may be treated by the very people that's
mm-hmm.
serving. Like,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then they come and not water the tree or not, you know, looking after the tree, but they still come and take the fruits or the shelter mm-hmm. or take the wood or that sort of tolerates and
goods.
Mm-hmm. Of course, like that's maybe a very high level for us to achieve to, but it's
good to have it in the map. Yeah, it's an idea. Yeah. Something else to Vikram Prabhu?
I was kind of, the meditation from yesterday about walking on grass and what grass is kind of quality. It's kind of similar to a tree, but and I think you sort of said it, but that implicit acceptance of its position, basically being it's implicit. It's not resisting. It just bends. It bends, and the tree does the same thing. It's basically totally, and I guess, accepting or absorbing its own kind of nature, in a sense, it's just happy to be who it is, in a sense.
Yeah.
And it outlives everyone.
Yes. Yeah. In that sense, it comes to mind, like, the trees is growing very slowly. So it's also like, it's growing with patience, let's put it that way. No? So we should also act with patience, no? Like responding thoughtfully to the situations that come to our life before rushing to react. No? In the same way that the tree is like, it's slow but very determined growth to the point that it's outliving? Mm-hmm. Outliving all of us. Especially here in New Zealand. I remember last year we went to this park, right? 1,000 years or more even.
Yeah.
Clearly outliving us. Yes.
I know we're going to look at the healthy aspect of, as you say, what Mahaprabhu wants with tolerance, but I was just thinking that, like in the first, it's got to be humble as the quiet grass, or in line with kind of what Uncle Hunter was saying, the tree doesn't protest, it doesn't make a noise,
mm-hmm.
even though it may be.
Mm-hmm.
It is, it's quiet like the grass.
Yeah.
It doesn't move.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if I have something that's going on for me, I'm like, I'm looking at how I can change my situation.
Mm.
Mm.
I'll have to move, I'll have to go somewhere and do something.
Mm.
It doesn't have a choice. It's sort of rooted.
Yeah. Rooted and moving beyond what we can see, but gradually growing.
Yeah.
Upwards. Downwards.
And trees cooperate with each other, right?
Yes.
You know, some sort of research on work together and roots and support each other.
Yeah, yeah, there is a whole network.
In New Zealand, one tree growing out of another tree.
You also see shelter belts of one, because all the roots are connected with one tree and shelter belt by the older.
One other example that comes to mind of tolerance from the trees. A tree is somehow shedding the leaves in a particular season to preserve its essence. I mean, it's part of the process of preservation. So in the same way, healthy tolerance will invite us to say no, to shed some leaves, to say no, to protect our focus, to like, how to say, set boundaries compassionately. Like I'm like shedding the leaves to protect myself, right?
Mm.
Yeah. Ramachandra.
I was just thinking, you wrote it, but you didn't write it, Maharaj, but in your book, there was a poem by Thomas Merton. He was talking about how the tree just has to be a tree. And that's what Krishna wants him to be.
Yeah.
And how we as persons are always trying to be something that we're not.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We can learn from the tree to just accept.
Yeah.
Very being.
Yeah.
Being God-given, and our nature
is
being.
Yeah, and that's again a way of saying tolerance. No, if we are, I think tolerance and acceptance go so close to each other. So a tree is fully accepting of himself, so to say, of itself. I'm a tree. He's not pretending being more than what it is. He's fine being a tree. So it's a form of tolerance, right? He's of acceptance. That, yeah, we need to learn from.
Trees are flexible too.
That's the interesting paradox, right? Trees are very firm, but very flexible in their own way also, right? Or if you, even if you want to say certain trees, I don't see any flexibility, but here you have the grass, which is very flexible. So in the whole verse, Mahaprabhu is combining like firmness and flexibility constantly. So we have to learn how to combine the two. It's not only about being firm, because you end up being too rigid, and it's not just being absolutely flexible to anything and everything, because you end up being abused. No, so you have to be, when I'm firm, when I set boundaries, this and that, when I'm properly rooted in this, but also what do I need to adapt, to change, to bend? No, it's a whole dancing between the two, right? Constantly. Yes.
It's a real example of oneness and difference, isn't it, in a sense?
Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. Yes, yes. What seems paradoxical or contradictory on some level finds harmony and possibility in a higher way, deeper way of thinking. No? Not black and white, but either or, as they say, or both and. Right? Yeah.
All right, what about, I don't know if you mentioned this, Arghanto, but tolerating criticism or even insults from others?
Insults from others?
Criticism or insults from others about us, valid or not.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, then possibly learning from it. But,
yeah.
And also tolerating our own resistance or avoidance, stubbornness, advice, whatever.
And again, we are going to the always to the part of how to do that in a healthy way. Because I may come and start to insult all of you. I won't do it, hopefully. Krishna protect me, may never do that. But if I end up doing that, okay, we have to tolerate that. But what does it mean? That, no, it's not that it doesn't mean like you garland me and say, Maharaj, please continue. No, it means that probably I won't take it personal and I won't feel resentful and try to counteract and like eye for an eye, how do you say, tooth for a tooth.
No?
Because that's kind of, that's not solving the problem. Or many times even worse than that. You find that even evolution in scripture. In one part of scripture, you will think maybe mostly in the Bible I'm talking here. Instead of eye for an eye, you say, okay, you took me an eye, I will take both of your eyes and two arms and the two legs. No? Because many people react like that. No? Okay, you I don't know, you broke my car, I'll burn your house. So it's disproportionate. So okay, eye for an eye is a progress in that direction. Of course, on top of that, Jesus will say, turn your other cheek. Which again, you have to understand those examples. It's not just lend yourself to abuse, but find a place or a way to be compassionate in the midst of those situations. Sometimes to be compassionate, you need to take a distance from that situation. If you're insulting me, I may not be able to be compassionate in front of your insult. So I may need to take a healthy distance so I can be compassionate. I can pray for you. I can understand from which place maybe of fear or brokenness you are coming and you need to insult me, and I will understand it's not personal ultimately. So that may be the tolerance how the tolerance takes shape in such a situation for some of us, right? Okay, let's continue with Mahaprabhu's example of the tree here. I mean, we can continue brainstorming forever, and it's a pleasure, but I'd like to share a few more points. So again, Mahaprabhu is giving the example of a tree, as we mentioned. Unfortunately, many times trees are hardly noticed in today's world, or if they are noticed, it's just in the context of, oh, wood. We can cut it and get money or whomever, in terms of personal advantage. But Mahaprabhu is using something that we hardly notice as one of his most important gurus. So he's using the tree as an example of tolerance. As we say, how the tree tolerates, not in a toxic way, not in a spiritually bypassy way, but in a very gentle way, very generous mode. As we were saying, the tree may be receiving sun, cold, winter, snow, storm, someone who didn't find a restroom nearby, and trees are public bathrooms for everyone. A couple that is in love, and they will go and write the name of their beloved in the tree. Nowadays, maybe graffiti, probably a more updated version. And while all that is happening, not only the tree is receiving that, tolerating that, not protesting, but the tree is giving constantly. That's it, the quality of tolerance of the tree. Tree is giving shelter, shadow, fruit, oxygen, giving, while receiving these type of things many times. So in one sense, that's a high standard of tolerance that Mahaprabhu is bringing here, because he's inviting us to tolerate what's coming from a healthy place, as we are trying to explain. But it's not just like, hey, why you are not giving? Well, because I'm tolerating now, so I cannot give now. I will give when I don't have to tolerate anything. Well, that will never happen. Right? So that's part of the implication here. Okay, if your life of giving will start when you don't have to tolerate anything, you will never start giving. So we have to learn to tolerate in a way that we can give during the tolerance, so to say. That the tolerance is not limited to me tolerating something or someone. That's not tolerance. Real tolerance is, again, an acceptance, as we were saying, of reality, and a compassionate acceptance of what comes to me, and giving. No? Giving from that place as well. Agranda, yes.
I was thinking all the examples we've talked about, tolerance. We talked about distress. But then Krishna also says we should tolerate happiness. And see that maybe the tree is treated really nicely one by one owner, and then a new property owner comes and mistreats it, but it knows that it's going to come and go. So I was just wondering if something you could add there just about how we...
Yes, I was planning to go to that verse in a minute. Can we wait a few more minutes? Okay, just giving a trailer of that. No, sorry, thank you. Thank you for bringing it. It was a trailer of what's coming in 20 minutes. Just coming. You're nearby. How do they say? You're nearby cinemas or something. Yeah, because it's an important verse. Yeah. And it's an interesting idea of tolerating happiness, right? Because you generally do not think of, okay, I have to tolerate being happy. So what's the meaning of that? I thought I had only to tolerate negative stuff, so to say, right? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he comments on this verse, he wrote a commentary on the Sikshastakam. And when he comments on this verse, he says that the tolerance that Mahaprabhu was speaking here, he defines the tolerance as pure compassion free from envy, interestingly. Which again broadens the idea of tolerance that we may have. A pure compassion free from envy. Again, the tree is receiving all this stuff, so to say, and giving in a very compassionate way, without envy, without, oh, you are giving me this, I won't give you anything now back, something like that, right? There's this famous saying, ancient saying from the East, probably it's from the Persian culture, and this is a strong one, to show the extent to which the tree is tolerating in this mode of pure compassion, free from envy. And the saying says, maybe you heard that, but if not, if you didn't, and if you did, whatever the case, fasten your seatbelt. So the saying says, be like the sandalwood tree, which perfumes the axe that is cutting it. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful poetry, but we have to walk the talk, right? So be that like the sandalwood tree, which is perfuming the axe that is cutting it. So I come with my axe to kill the tree, basically. How does the tree respond? Perfuming, ornamenting everything. Again, these type of examples are beautiful, poetic, but we have to know how to translate them into action. Because if not, in other words, the idea is your tolerance has to be such, you have to tolerate on a level that is enough for you to give perfume back to the person. You follow my point? If you are tolerating more than what you can tolerate, probably you won't be giving any perfume, but the exact opposite of that. So you find your level of tolerance that it can keep you in a place of pure compassion, free from envy, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, right? So for me, that example also gives that warning, so to say, no? Not just imitate the sandalwood tree and become dysfunctional. That's not tolerance, but do it, tolerate whatever tolerance you can offer today, acceptance of reality, do it in a way that keeps you with a smile, let's put it that way. And you are not becoming bitter and resentful towards life because of having to tolerate so much or something, right? You want to say something?
Yeah, what comes to mind is the idea of doing something that ultimately ends up really being beneficial. And I was thinking the shloka that is quoted in regards to rules and regulations, that all of the rules and regulations...
Smarta vyasa tatam vishnu vishnu. Always remember Krishna.
Always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if what you're doing in the name of austerity means you forget Krishna or you forget or something, the end result is not ultimately beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
It's your yardstick, as you say.
Yeah, I take that verse as a yardstick because totally like that. No, it's a verse that says, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. All rules and regulations are servants of these two principles. In other words, if whatever you are doing gets in the way of your remembering Krishna, then you have to recalibrate that. No, there's something that is not working. Even if it's tolerance, even if it's being humble, if it's disturbing me and Krishna got out of the picture, probably I'm not being humble or tolerating from the right place. So I have to find a way that keeps me focused with my goal, so to say. And I will say, of course, regarding the example of the tree given by Mahaprabhu, okay, the tree can't tolerate in that exemplary way as we are describing. But again, as we are saying, the tree is very rooted as well as growing upwards. And as you may know, it's generally known that generally trees grow more in the roots than what they grow upwards. Sometimes even 2-3 times more. So in other words, the tree can go upwards. You left the meeting, you fail in tolerance, Bhaktimara. What happened? Okay, that's good. So again, trees are generally 2-3 more times growing more in their roots than they are growing more in their, how to say, canopy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big lesson in this connection. In other words, do not expect to be like the sandalwood tree if you are not rooted enough. If you don't have enough spiritual realization, do not try to act like a superhero in terms of tolerance, because you are not rooted enough. So you will fall, you will collapse very easily. So again, the tree can only grow upward so much because it has grown downward so much. It has to be at least proportional. Though, as we see, there are even more roots. There's more growing downward than upward. So I'm repeating this again and again, because many times in our tradition we have overemphasized ascending, transcending, and we become like too disjointed from our grounding in many ways, right? So it's a balance, no? Growing upward, growing downward, and then we can tolerate challenges and situations, but all of that depending on how rooted we are, how realized we are, how experienced. We cannot tolerate more than that. It's not tolerance anymore. Something else. Can I read one excerpt that I wrote, and I want to read it directly, and then we go to the raised hands. It's just a brief paragraph, just to close the idea. I like participation, so great that you're like, we are doing all this, creating all this together. It's not a one-man show here. Don't put me on that position, please. Just as a tree cannot grow beyond the strength of its roots, we cannot sustainably tolerate more than the depth of our grounding in Krishna consciousness. I'll read that one again, with your permission. Just as a tree cannot grow beyond the strength of its roots, we cannot sustainably tolerate more than the depth of our grounding in Krishna consciousness. Tolerance becomes unhealthy or unsustainable when it extends beyond the capacity of our inner anchoring. Thus, true tolerance is not about forcefully enduring, but about drawing strength from a deeply rooted inner connection, allowing us to give generously while remaining balanced.
Would you read that last part again, Maharaj?
Yeah. Thus, in this way, true tolerance is not about forcefully enduring, but about drawing strength from a deeply rooted inner connection, allowing us to give generously while remaining balanced. So again, I'm just paraphrasing what a tree is, right? I'm saying that now, but actually the tree is saying all the things to us, right? So I think that important notion of the growth of the roots is so important for us to understand why Mahaprabhu is, okay, he's inviting us to tolerate like the tree. But how does the tree tolerate? How does the tree grow and sustain itself? So, some hands were raised a few minutes ago.
I was just thinking of the relationship as sort of just synonymous realizations, but relationship between tolerance and renunciation, and false renunciation as opposed to proper. Proper renunciation, because it's quite a relevant and prominent term in our, in our world, is renunciation and false renunciation.
I think that for me as a renunciant officially, renunciation only works as long as it keeps your heart open. So you have to renounce in such a way that your heart remains open. In the name of renunciation, you cannot renounce your heart. You cannot renounce in a word that your heart becomes like a rock. So it's another yardstick. Okay, where's my renunciation taking me? I'm opening my heart. Is my heart blossoming like a flower? Or is like contracting and being restricted instead of expanded, right? So, and a tolerance is something, if I tolerate from the wrong place, my heart contracts. If I'm humble from the wrong place, I'm restricting my sense of being. If I'm doing it from the right place, I will feel the blossoming. We know how it feels. We know that when it's actually opening. So we have to keep very much in touch with how we are feeling, basically. Even with how the body is responding. Alejandro, you raised your hand a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I was observation in gardening that and it relates to, I think, trees as well, but you know, like the tomatoes, a lot of experienced gardeners will say, well, it's good to plant them very deep. So then they're too shallow, then if there's not much rain, then they're going to very quickly dry up and get disease and die. But if they're deeply rooted, then they can get more access to the moisture that they need. So I think that was another And then also, just another garden observation, but and this,
you have a big responsibility being a gardener. After going through these verses, like, you're surrounded by gurus at every moment of your life.
And this relates to, the Supreme Gardener's verse here, that if just superficial watering, especially because I'm growing a lot of tomatoes, the best is if you give them deep water, and you can do it less frequently. If you deep water, then they can, they do really well. But if you just quickly run through there, it's just on the top level, it's not getting to the root.
Mm.
And so it's just, it relates to obviously the chanting and
Totally. This, yeah. Thank you. Good to have a gardener here, especially for this third verse of Sikshas. And I appreciate that you make the point that Mahaprabhu himself identified himself as a gardener in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I have a few things to learn from that.
Maharaj, can I ask? So it sounds like you're indicating that if I'm tolerating properly, healthily, then I'll feel enlivened, I'll feel my heart opening, I'll feel encouraged, inspired, enthusiastic.
Because again, tolerance has to do with, I would say, acceptance, compassion, acceptance of myself, acceptance of what's coming to me in my life. And acceptance has to do with accepting who I am and what's coming. Accepting of myself in itself opens the heart. You're living from the place of who you are. So we are accepting who I am, which are my capacities, which are the situations coming to my life. I cannot fight against them. I cannot resist them. They're coming. I accept, I forgive them. I will go there in a minute, because one way for me to translate tolerance here will be forgiveness also. But we'll go there in a minute. So I think it's a good symptom for us to be introspective and say, okay, is my tolerance making my heart blossom? I feel that my heart is blossoming, expanding, or I feel the opposite, So. I'm going to the verse that you were asking about a minute ago. There, this verse and one other verse that I think Trivikram Prabhu quoted the other day, Tatenu Kampam Shushamiksham, and the verse from the Gita, Matra Sparsas Tukantya. Both speak of tolerance, of different types of tolerance, I will say. No? The verse of the Bhagavad Gita, which is chapter 2, verse 14, if I'm not mistaken. Krishna is saying, as the different seasons come and go, you should tolerate the appearance and disappearance of sukha dukkha, happiness and distress. Of course, when Krishna is saying happiness there, he's not talking about the bliss of bhakti. No, he's talking about the happiness that becomes distress and the distress that becomes happiness. No, the dual, the two sides of the coin of the illusory experience of happiness. No, it's not saying, when you are happy because of bhakti, tolerate that. No, that's something to celebrate. But the other things that come and go, that we know come and go, we have to tolerate them. Tolerate understanding there is a beginning and an end to this. No? That's the example he's given, winter, summer. We clearly know there's a beginning and an end to those seasons. So I cannot be extremely joyful, because that will become extreme misery when that's over. And I cannot become extremely miserable, because at the end I will end and you fall. So he's talking about that happiness and distress that has a clear beginning and end. So we should just know that that's the case and not reject them. We are not hating summer, hating spring, because it comes and goes. We love them as they are, but we know they will come and go. No? So we accept, but we don't become clinging to, dear spring, please last forever. No? Even in Golok Vrindavan, they have different seasons and all that. There are different forests. Govinda Lilamrita is described, there is a forest season, a winter season, a rainy season, a rainy forest, a winter forest, a spring forest. So there's even variety in that realm. So Krishna speaks there more about the type of tolerance with the intelligence, I will say. Krishna says, understand that there is a beginning and an end. And on the basis of that understanding, tolerate. again, we need some understanding to tolerate. That's the point. If I just, I'm commanded to tolerate and I don't know why, and nobody's explaining me, I won't tolerate. I may rebel to that, or I may try to tolerate from a very dysfunctional place. So our intelligence needs some explanation, and then we can tolerate. Although it's hard, it may be too cold some days, too hot some days, but what can I do? Should I get depressed because today is not as, whatever, as hot as some other day? No, it is what it is. So that's the basic of that, the base of that verse, which of course, again, is counterintuitive for how many people think, because for most people it's like, when they get some happiness, they want just to extend that forever. No. That happiness, material happiness, so they want just to extract the juice as much as they can without understanding it's over. It's over the very moment in one sense that it came. It starts to be over in the period of time. Instead of accepting that sequence, more. And of course, when it's no longer there, distress comes, and we are not accepting the distress. We are not connecting the distress with the other happiness and how we reacted to this. And anyhow, we know what entanglement means. Now, the other verse of the Bhagavatam, Tatenu Kampam Sushamiksham Munjane Vatmakritam Vipakam Hridbhag Bhapuddhir Bhidadam Namaste Jiveta Jumukti Pade Sadhayabhak. This is a verse from Brahma, Brahma Stuti, the prayers of Brahma after Brahma's bewilderment, probably the most famous prayer of his series. There are 40 verses. I think this verse, chapter 14, verse whatever. It's one of the first verses. So he's saying to Krishna, for someone who is earnestly looking for your grace, no? So he's qualifying the statement, someone who is really earnest for your mercy, that person will tolerate the result of his previous actions. While Hrid Bhat Bapur Bir Bidanandam, with body, Bapu, Bhak, words, Hrid, heart, praising you. So it's another level of tolerance here. In the Gita, Krishna is saying, understand the beginning and end of the passing seasons and the passing emotions or whatever, tolerate with your intellect. Here Krishna is saying, while tolerating the results of your previous misdeeds, taking responsibility for that, praise me with words, heart, actions. It's another level of tolerance. It's a very devotional tolerance. Krishna says, he who does so, jivete jomukti pade sadaiva, becomes a rightful heir, you say in English? Heir?
Yeah.
To divine love, ultimately. And for me, that's important because that verse is saying you tolerate, again, what's coming, and with all your faculties, praise me. So again, the idea is, unless you tolerate what you can tolerate, you cannot engage in praise of Krishna with all your faculties. You will be too disturbed, right? If I'm trying to tolerate more of what I should tolerate, probably I won't be engaging all my faculties in praise of Krishna. I will be somewhere else. Again, I won't be able to always think of Krishna and forget him. So for me, this verse is also giving that idea. You can only praise Krishna with all your faculties as long as your tolerance is realistic, healthy, sustainable. If you go into superhero martyr mode and try to tolerate more of what you can, you won't be able to. You won't be able maybe to even survive. What to speak of praising Krishna? No? Like, I don't know. I remember Vasudev Datta, this associate of Mahaprabhu, who will tell him, please put on my shoulders the karma of all living entities and you liberate all of them. I stay here. Who can do that? he was willing to do that and he was capable of tolerating that. But if we don't have that rootedness, again, going back to the tree example, will be burned to ashes in 1 nanosecond. So again, it goes back to this line from the Bhagavatam, Sve Adhikari Janishta Saguna Parikirtita. Establishing what's your Adhikar is real virtue. Establishing what you can do, what you cannot do is real virtue. Real beauty, Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say. Knowing where you are As simple as that sounds, it's real beauty, right? We will do one exercise now. Are you ready for that? Yeah? Can you tolerate that?
Yes.
It's not that demanding. It's something that I trust everyone has the adhikar for.
Is it happiness or distress?
One comes with the other, so you may feel both.
I think I can tolerate a piece of pizza right now.
So we'll do this again, like we did the other day in groups. How many are? One, there's one, Samukhi, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
14.
Why? Why me?
Why not?
Maybe Swami needs to, maybe I'm tolerating going to the bathroom and I need to go there while you're doing the exercise. And I'm being sincere. I'm acknowledging my adhikar here. So we will make groups of three, and one maybe group of four. So the idea is like for 10 minutes or so, and then we return for a few more minutes and we conclude. So we will assign in each group, one person will play the role of the tree. Each one will play the tree. We will take turns for that. So others in the group have to present like one or someone, some challenge, like some criticism, ingratitude, conflict, something that to be tolerated, right? So then the tree, whomever represents the tree, have to respond with tarora pisaishna, with a healthy tolerance, whatever, however it comes, no? Compassion, acceptance, generosity, and so on. And then you can rotate roles and everyone plays the tree and everyone else comes with the axe to the tree, so
when,
to
when
say.
You say play the tree mode, do you mean be a human but act with the tolerance of a tree?
No, you have to paint yourself green, you have to put some apples here standing like this.
Oh, it is, it's easy.
Can we set boundaries?
Huh?
Or do we have to just accept it?
Whatever you feel it's a healthy way of responding to that. I mean, I'm not. There's no one single formula, as we say. As humility takes different shapes, tolerance takes different shapes as well, right?
So, what would be an example that you would say to the person who's a tree?
If you are a tree, what will I say to you? I hate you.
Oh no!
I mean, I love Ramachandra, but I'm playing the axe here. No? So, what do you do with that? What? Yeah, I mean, and again, tolerance doesn't mean like, yes, you are right, I'm worthy of hate, or now I hate you back, but how to respond to that, according
tree,
to what we have shared so far.
The tree will accept everything, whereas me as a person,
yeah, how much
level of tolerance would be different to
me. Yeah, exactly. And there are different trees also, right? There are trees which are more rooted than others. So again, drawing the essence of what the tree is teaching to us, and according to our adhikar, our capacity, how we can represent that spirit.
So you're saying according to our own adhikar, how would we respond with tolerance? Not just some absolute standard.
No, of course. That's not what we are trying to convey in this meeting. No, so do it in a healthy way. Okay, so you rotate in total 10 minutes, not more than that, a little bit, 10, 15 maximum. How did it go for the trees, for the non-trees?
I never got a chance to be a tree, so I don't really know.
We have a chance every single day, no problem.
Yeah, sure.
It's okay. Hey, it's fine.
I found it challenging,
uh-huh.
And I think Casey and Samukhi also.
I just defeated myself every time.
Why challenging? In which sense, you always say?
Well, one of us was apparently quite reactive,
mm-hmm.
defending.
Mm-hmm.
It was a challenge for me because I normally I would reflect if someone was negative or abusive, generally.
Mm.
And I wasn't sure if that was tolerating. The second time, I reflected, but I said, but I'm wondering if you knew what was going on for me at that moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a reaction,
yeah.
But it was an opening up.
Mm.
Maybe a further
yeah.
discussion.
Yeah, and of course, needless to say, this exercise, is, there's no like correct way of doing it and wrong way of doing it. So it's not about, let's see if I pass the test or if I fail miserably. It's just exposing ourselves to certain dynamics and see what comes, no? To make it a little bit more experiential, translate the theory to the experience. So, okay, so we can spend a few more minutes, if you can tolerate me, with a few more ideas before we conclude today's gathering. And I'd like to again, as I mentioned to you, we have talked about tolerance in terms of acceptance, in terms of compassion, and I'd like to go to the point, to the word forgiveness now, which I think is very, very appropriate to flesh out what tolerance is actually, no? In connection to what Bhaktivinoda Thakur said again, free compassion, pure compassion, free from envy. So again, even when attacked, the tree is not retaliating, the tree is not hating, the tree is not becoming bitter or resentful. It continues to give, or even more especially, it continues to forgive. And there comes something very interesting, because the word forgive, the etymology of forgive, means to give, and for means completely. But also forgive can mean to give away. No? So in other words, it can mean, like for me to give away is like to release, and so I can give completely. No? So if you're attacking me, I give away resentfulness, I give away taking it personal, I give away all the things that do not allow me to give completely. No? So forgive. Now, when you are forgiving someone or something or yourself to begin with, that's a form of giving, right? Ramachandra, you are raising your hand.
Oh, sorry, Maharaj. Just there's a saying that says how God gives and forgives, and we get and forget.
Oh, I didn't know that one. That's a good one. Thank you. I like play of words. That's a good one. I cannot do them when I give an Spanish lecture, because sometimes the words are very different, but in English it works. I have to find the Spanish parallel to that. So in other words, again, to forgive means to give away, to release, not to release anger, release resentment, release bitterness, release all these burdens that sometimes we carry with us for lifetimes, basically in the journey. And of course, I'm not saying forgetting in the sense of, sometimes they have this saying, forgive but not forget.
Mm-hmm.
No, in the sense that someone abused you or someone, okay, I won't forget, not in a resentful way, but I learned from the experience. Mm-hmm. So I'm not that naive now, next time, but I have to forgive. No? And of course, the forgiving cannot be also, I have like a man, like a forceful, okay, he abused you 5 minutes ago, forgive him. No, it may take time, it may be a process. It may take years, it may take, but it's healthy to keep in mind that forgiveness is a way of giving ourselves. And again, many times all the things that I'm telling, forgiving, starts at home. Many times we forget how little we forgive ourselves. Like today, I recorded in the morning a podcast with Sukha Bahadasi. We were talking today about it. And at one point I shared with her this quote that I shared a few times from, and I think I shared with you some days ago, from Dorothy Day, where she was saying, our first class, I only love God as much as I love the person I love the least. And in the context of our conversation came the idea, okay, I only love God as much as I love the person I love the least. And that person I love the least is generally me. Many times, no? Because many times we treat ourselves in the way worse than how we treat everyone else. No? All the things that we tell ourselves, we don't dare to tell to anyone else, right? So when we are talking here about forgiveness, try to bear in mind, it's not just always outside of ourselves. We need also to learn to forgive ourselves. That's a way of being tolerant with ourselves, no? Forgiving. So try to make these two words one in your mind. Tolerating means forgiving. It means accepting the reality of things with all their messiness, with all their imperfection, and forgiving and giving ourselves and others another opportunity, another chance, as we are being given that chance over and over again. It's a profound act of generosity, of offering ourselves to others, but to ourselves as well. And again, as I say, sometimes in certain situations, we may need to take a distance from certain people in our attempt to tolerate. But even in that case, we are called to forgive. If it may take time, but that's the invitation from Krishna himself, from all our greatest masters. In all traditions, you will see this constant invitation to forgive, to free our heart from the chains of resentment, of bitterness, of hatefulness, and to give myself the gift of peace. If I forgive you, I'm giving peace to me, and I'm giving peace to you also. Even if I cannot tell anything to you because of circumstances, we have to be in the distance. But in the distance, I can work on forgiveness. And that's tolerance also. That's tolerance. So it's challenging, but it's transformative, in the same level. So as you were saying, it's not only, okay, you break my eye, I take the two of your eyes. No, it's not disproportionate violence. It's not even eye for an eye, but it's learning to forgive in a healthy way. Again, as we were talking about tolerance in a healthy way, forgiveness have to come from a place that we are growing. It's not a forced forgiveness out of fear, out of intimidation, like forgive him for what he did, and you are like, I don't even understand why to forgive. What's forgiveness? So again, it's proportionate to our level of rootedness. Always keep in mind the example we gave. The tree can do all that he does on top of the surface as much as he is rooted. So we may have these beautiful ideals of extreme forgiveness, of extreme tolerance that are inspiring, but of course, in practice, we may fall short of that. But we keep them in mind as an ideal, and wherever we are, we try to follow that according to where we are. So, I just want to emphasize that point on tolerance is reframed as forgiveness. We're all very silent now.
I've got a question. When you're making that point that we can only be as tolerant as we're rooted, then I'm just trying to understand how we actually apply that in the sense of...
How we actually apply what, sorry?
How we apply that.
What do you mean by that?
The tolerance, how we apply that tolerance as much as we're rooted, in the sense that tolerance somehow or another also indicates that... you have to go a little bit beyond, because that's what tolerance means. So how do we ascertain our root and our level of tolerance?
Yeah, of course, we may not be able in the moment, okay, let me check my level of, my current Adhikar level. I'm 7.5, so okay, I can't tolerate you. We cannot do that. It's sometimes, trial and error.
Yeah.
It's part of the learning curve, and many times we learn, as Richard Rohr will say, we learn more by doing it wrong than by doing it right. So it's okay. No, we shouldn't be afraid of failing, because we can always learn so much from that. But of course, we should have some, like, as much as we can, some healthy, rational, realistic criteria of where I am, and trying to, again, not to be over complacent, but to challenge myself a little bit, or accept the challenge that is coming from beyond myself, but also feel how I'm reacting to that. As we were talking about these yardsticks, is my heart blossoming? I feel I'm growing, it's difficult, but I'm feeling like I'm alive, I'm growing, or it feels like crippling, you say? Yeah. It feels something like contracting. I'm going too much. It feels like overwhelmingly demanding. And I think we all have been in all those scenarios. So we know how all each one tastes like. So we have to kind of... But we also have been in those situations where we are being demanded, so to say, or challenged, let's say, to grow to a point that we need to grow in the context of affection, of course. It's a healthy challenge. We know what that is, what does it feel, and that's exciting, that's validating, that's like, wow, empowering. So again, sometimes we may not find the proper level, and we may go too much beyond, or we may become a little below the ideal, but we can always learn from the experience, right?
Yeah, you've given the principle that thank you, I understand. Yeah.
Which principle
well,
you were referring?
The principle being that it ideally would be where we're rooted, as you're saying, and mm-hmm. the heart would be opening up. So it's just becoming, remembering that's the principle, and being a little bit introspective and honest with yourself, and honesty being, can I go a little bit further, or is this too much for me?
Navigation. And there are stages in life, of course, no? That like today I may come to it with a challenge and I'm able to, okay, show myself on this level of tolerance, let's say. But then I went through a few battles in life and a few weeks after, that level of tolerance is too much for me at that moment. I need a little more of like a hibernation, so to say, restoration. So it requires daily vigilance, no? Introspection, observing, okay, where I am today. No? Not even where I am this year, on this lifetime, where I am today. Tomorrow maybe it's very different. No?
There seems that there would also be levels of tolerance in your intolerance. Because, okay, I'm not going to tolerate this, but that could come in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I should do it in a tolerant, intolerant way. In other words, not be too extreme.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And try and maintain some respect.
Yeah, because even when you say, I won't tolerate this, okay, but that doesn't mean that you won't tolerate anything.
Mm.
No? So it's just, I won't accept a toxic level of acceptance of some things, so I can be properly rooted in a healthy level of tolerance of things. So it's not that you are being intolerant. You are just choosing to tolerate on the right level. Ideally, we should not be intolerant. We should just learn to tolerate on the right level. So when something abusive comes, it doesn't mean that you are intolerant to that. It means that you know what needs to be tolerated and what needs not to be tolerated, and take the proper stance, right? Yeah, Trivikram.
I was just thinking about how tolerance of the tree and all of the different facets of that.
Mm-hmm.
One that you were bringing up is the magnanimity or the charitability of the tree,
mm-hmm.
which you also have to tolerate your kind of inner tendencies to be selfish, basically, or to overfactor in your own needs over above others. But there comes a place where there's a need to exhibit a degree of charitability in
mm-hmm.
one's life, and that takes a degree of tolerance.
Mm.
And I think, especially, I mean, it's seen it as the Dharma of the Grihastha, right? To have some charitability towards people.
Mm.
And I'm just thinking actually, there's so many aspects to the tolerance of a tree that we can see how the tree still gives, even though it's feeling the pinch, so to speak.
And of course, in connection to the humility we talked about yesterday, again, if you are humble properly, as we were talking, naturally you will tolerate from that place of healthy humility, right? So one thing naturally, again, we are talking about different things, but they are the same thing, as we were saying.
Mm-hmm.
But we can also speak about proper humility engages you in proper tolerance, so to say. Now, there's this famous quote in, it's like a short composition, Subhashita, they are calling in India, like very short composition. They say like a tree, which can somehow combines the two first lines. It says a tree that is full of fruits, a fruitful tree, bends down,
mm-hmm.
right? Like virtuous people bow down with humility.
Mm-hmm.
because they have some fruits, internal fruit that makes them bow down, like the tree full of fruits bends down. And on the opposite, the dry out tree or a tree without fruits, like full people, says this famous line, never bend. No, they remain like, It's like a way of saying, instead of, that's another verse that came to my mind in connection to this too, no? Another teaching from the tree, right? It's bending down by the weight of the fruits of inner realization.
So the deep-rootedness marriage, that's like wisdom, isn't it? That means
yeah.
Being knowledgeable.
Yeah, experience. It's not
informal.
I don't like to make much of a separation. Remember, don't create the dichotomy material or spiritual. The whole project is one here. So, the rootedness is a symbol for grounded experience in life. And again, the roots can go endlessly deep. So there are levels of experience, there are levels of wisdom, there's levels of elderhood, so to say. So as much as we have that, we are firm to deal what's coming outside. Again, the wind and everything, the tree won't. If the tree is not too rooted, as Prabhupada will say, when you just plant a seed and there's a small, sprout, you have to put a fence around, because its sprout is so fragile. Just a wind and a little animal uprooted, because it's not too rooted yet. So you need the fence. But when the tree, the sprout, future tree, is enough, rooted enough, it corresponds with the time that the sprout starts to look beyond the fence. It grows beyond the fence. And it can deal with wind and other things to tolerate because it's rooted enough. Right? Mm-hmm. And that becomes reflected on the outside by growing upwards beyond the fence, right? But in the beginning, we may need a fence because we are not rooted enough. So the same in our life. In the beginning, a guru, I will say, okay, don't listen to him. Just look at this, think like that. This is a fence. Because if you deal with too much diversity, mm-hmm. other people, you will be confused. You are not rooted enough. mm-hmm. But in the context of that fence, you are growing. And you are getting rooted. And at one point, you naturally, when the time has come, you will be looking by yourself beyond the fence. Nobody even needs to tell you, okay, now you can look beyond the fence. You will be looking beyond the fence because of your very growth and rooting, right? And you will be able to deal and tolerate all the things that come and go. Yeah. You raised your hand a few minutes ago, Agahanta.
If someone's insulted me and I felt hurt or whatever, and after a little while I think maybe I should forgive, either way, I say I forgive this person or I forgive you, but at the same time I'm repressing or suppressing the anger or the envy or the hatred or the resentment or the vengefulness, and that's, I think that's,
is that true?
That's very common. That,
So would you say that's true forgiveness or not?
No. No, I think it's artificial. It's not. It's not going to give me peace. Resolution of those things.
Yeah, because in one sense, first I may need to recognize I'm angry at you for what you did to me, and on top of that, I forgive you. Right? I mean, when I reach to the point I forgive you, is having acknowledged the harm I received. Because if I do not acknowledge any of that, I'm not forgiving anything, basically. You follow my point? If you did something really bad to me, but I kind of like do not see any of that, I do not recognize what that created in me, I say, yeah, I forgive you. I'm not forgiving the person, and I'm not being, again, healthy, nor to me, nor to the other person. First, I need to go through, okay, this felt wrong, this felt abusive, I'm angry, I feel this. And on top of all that, whenever that moment comes, I forgive you. But yeah, first we need to go through all that messiness also. No? Forgiveness is not just like a device escapism device. Because as easily everyone can say, okay, I forgive you. Okay, and that can become even a toxic relationship because it can become abusive to you and you become accustomed to forgive me without going through what you are feeling. It says, I forgive you, I forgive you, I forgive you, and I abuse you and abuse you. So
we could say, I'm working on the process of trying to forgive you.
Yeah, but
it's a process.
Yeah, but maybe we may need to first tell the person I'm angry, and we may need to tell that to the person, to help the person to acknowledge what you did hurt me.
Yeah, and in time I'll forgive you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is part of my process of forgiving you. Yeah, and it's important that, because sometimes if someone tells me I'm angry at you because of what you did, generally we don't see that as, oh, that's part of your process of forgiving me. We think the opposite, like, why are you attacking me? Why are you saying? So it's important that that's being done and felt from this part of my forgiving process. As much as it feels or sounds like the opposite, if I'm doing it consciously as, because I want to forgive you, first I need to tell you how much you hurt me and how angry am I at you now. It's not my plan to remain here forever, but this is what's going on now. And I need to bring that so finally I can reach that place of real forgiveness. And that will be redeeming for both of us. Not only for me saying you are forgiven, but for you receiving my forgiveness from a genuine place. And when that happens, it's transforming for both parts. If both are relatively open to have the type of exchange, of course. In some extreme cases, unfortunately, you have to do your process by yourself, but the other person may not be willing to talk, to listen, to anything, to acknowledge anything. But still, you can do your part. And it still will be redemptive for you and for the other person on some level, at the distance. So, yeah. Let's conclude with one note in connection to Tarori Bhasa Kishnanana. Everyone is tempted to continue sharing for eternity, and that's the idea. We have eternity to continue sharing, so that's great. But as we were concluding these other lectures, let's touch on the note of unconditional love, which I feel is a very powerful healing point to go always. No? Krishna loves you unconditionally, accepts you infinitely. So how knowing that can help us to embrace the second line of Sikshastakam, Tarora Pisaishnana. And for that, I'd like to read you a brief excerpt from a forthcoming book that I'm writing on unconditional love. So I'm giving you the trailer, exclusive trailer. It may be super edited eventually and will sound very different to this, but this is the raw draft so far. Because I've written a chapter on the third verse of Sikshastakam through the lenses of unconditional love. So one way in which we can embrace this second line through unconditional love is when dealing with people we find difficult to tolerate, we should remember that they, too, are unconditionally loved by Krishna. The person I'm struggling with is an eternal recipient of God's causeless mercy. It doesn't mean that you stop seeing what's going on, but you are bringing a bigger picture. No matter how the other person is horribly acting, or I'm horribly acting, but talking about others in this case, they are loved by Krishna. Sometimes we forget that very easily, especially when someone is, disturbing us. So I think it's a healing point to bring that back to the picture. Okay, that person is loved by Krishna. It's not that Krishna is celebrating whatever wrong he's doing or she's doing, but the Atma in itself is being an object of love for God. As we discussed earlier, tolerance is best understood as compassion and forgiveness. In this light, we can meditate on how Krishna has been tolerating us compassionately and forgivingly from time immemorial. It will do no harm then to extend the same favor to others. reminding them and ourselves of how Krishna continues to accept each of us in his loving embrace. So that's another way of thinking. As we were saying many times, it's not so much I have to tolerate. I'm being tolerated by Krishna from time immemorial, with love and compassion. Don't forget that. It's not like Krishna's like, oh my God. Another lifetime in the heart of that person? Another one? As Paramatma, I'm tired of that guy. No, he's not getting it after 3 million, 44, whatever, lifetime. One more life, it's torture for me. That's not Krishna or heart. So. But he's there enduring our existence with love. No, our destruction, our denial of his existence. As I say always, he never leaves a note saying, find yourself another Paramatma and fed up with you, right? And leaves. No. He's there, faithfully, lovingly. So in that sense, we are being forgiven constantly by Krishna. We are being given another chance over and over and over again. So again, it will do no harm to extend that to others also. So in that sense, bringing this unconditional love can help us to tolerate, to express this tolerance. One more paragraph and we conclude here. As with any of these four qualities, we should learn to apply them to ourselves as well as to others. So now we are going back to self-forgiveness, self-compassion. We should be tolerant, compassionate, and forgiving toward ourselves, knowing that the Divine already feels all these things for us. As the Srimad Bhagavatam portrays, Krishna is like a loving mother who receives the kicks from her child within her womb, and rather than feeling annoyed, she tolerates the kicking as a joyful confirmation of the baby's presence and aliveness. Similarly, as Krishna, quote-unquote, endures our existence with nothing but love and forgiveness, we can extend that same endurance to ourselves and others, remembering the ancient tree's example of the third verse of Shikshastakam. So again, it has to be in all directions. It's not like tolerance to others, and I'm absolutely intolerant of me, no? Loving to Krishna, and I hate all of you. No? All these virtues have to be expressed in all directions, all encompassing. So that's a big art to be self-compassion. It's not self-indulgence. It's not laziness. It's not narcissism. No, there is a place for self-love, self-compassion that is humbling, that is moving, that is transforming, that is empowering. So that's what this verse is trying to talk about. This meant to be an empowering formula, so to say, in four lines, something that fills us with hope and prospect. So some thoughts I want to share with you today on this second line, Taror Api Sahishnuna, just to have a glimpse of how much time we can spend with these words, unlimited words coming from our unlimited Lord. So we'll conclude here for today, but I'll share a little homework. Yes. A little bit. Not forced homework, but you're invited to do it. So I'll share it with you and you see what you do. We will have our next meeting tomorrow evening for the Shikshastakam, and tomorrow morning we'll have Q&E, quest and exploration. Whatever topics you may like to talk about. So the homework basically is in connection to this last part, forgiveness. So identify in your life someone you find difficult to tolerate or forgive. It can be yourself. Again, I'm not giving any particular limitation here. And then reflect on this question, how makes viewing that someone as unconditionally loved by Krishna shift my perspective? No? Spend some time. Okay, how thinking of that person as being unconditionally loved by Krishna may shift my present state of whatever, intolerance, rejection, or difficulty in being compassionate. And then, to bring the whole circle to some healing conclusion, choose some small act of compassion or forgiveness toward this person that you can express during this week, let's put. So I don't give you only one day for that. And the act of compassion can be not necessarily calling of seeing the person in 3D in some situations may not be possible, but at least, I don't know, releasing resentment internally. Mm-hmm. Or offering some gesture or some thought or some prayer to that person, or even writing a letter to that person, whether you send it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, depending on the case. Again, I know that some of us may be in very complex situation with some people, so I'm not here trying to push something beyond our boundaries or rootedness or whatever. Mm-hmm. But maybe writing a letter expressing one's intention to forgive, whether you send it or not, or something else, you can be creative in that. But something that can bring us to this place of Tathagata peace, Sahishruna, and tolerance as forgiveness, basically. Mm. Yes?
Mm.
Do you tolerate my homework? Thank you. Thank you for your time, your acceptance, your willingness to... Well, I know that many of these conversations are very unsettling and very, like, challenging in one way, but I think that in a healthy way, we all need also to spend some time with these topics, and it's beautiful for me to be able to share with you and challenge myself in all this, for sure. As I always say, you cannot imagine, I am the one here opening my mouth and Krishna is hearing me, oh, you are saying all these fancy things about mm-hmm. tolerance. Okay, let's see how you walk your talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not always passing the test, I must tell, no? But anyhow, it's beautiful to be on the journey together. And see you tomorrow for our morning Q&A. And in the evening, we continue with the third line, Amanina, Manadena, the two of them. On the next meeting, we'll go Kirtaniya Sadahari. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Sikshastakam ki jai, Sikshastakam's third verse ki jai, Gaur Sadhu Sangha ki jai, Gaur Premananda hari. Panchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyaiva cha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah.